Thanks, Honorable Chair. We sent out this document to you yesterday, and we were hoping that copies have been made for members. Just a briefing note on the my vote counts constitutional court and high court matters. We send it out to you directly, Chair. All right. We're going to make a copy. It's not a long one. Can we then move to the next agenda item? Because, I mean, members, I don't think would want to even listen to you without following it. So we'll ask for a few copies on that one, and as soon as it comes, you can talk to it. It's not a problem. Honourable members, we received 21 submissions. You'd recall that we have tentatively put aside the 7th and 8th of November for public hearings. So what we're putting to you today is the question, are there any of those submissions that we think we want to call for public hearings, and are there any that we don't think we want to call for public hearings? Let me indicate up front that we made a commitment that Black First, Land First will be called regardless what happens, because we had left them out. Proposal from our side, Honourable Members, is as in the first round, let's afford everybody an opportunity to come and do their presentation. All 21 to do their presentations. Can we have any comments from the members in terms of who should we call of the 21 submitters?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's an order to invite everyone to come and present, but I don't think we need to call them, actually. Everyone should be given the opportunity, but if people don't wish to come, then so be it. So that would be my input.
Comrade Gordon?
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I think I agree with you on Black First, Land First. I think there was a commitment to afford them the opportunity, but in relation to the rest, I would say my expectation is that in the first phase we did work and we're able to say this is where we have gone. Now, maybe administratively what could have been done without taking away our right to make the final decision is to say which submission actually takes from what has already been done and which submission is a submission that is almost like we're starting, so that we don't necessarily afford people the opportunity to come even if their presentations are substantively almost as if we're starting. It must be something that takes us, that talks to the work that has already been done and advances it in one aspect or the other.
Bob.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, I agree with Honourable Gordon. Maybe it would be advisable for us to go through the summary. It was circulated, but for the draft, just to run through this, the summary of submissions, and then we could answer that very question of, you know, whether any of those submissions really speak to the draft or they speak to before the draft. Because then people will be having a second bite at the cherry and we can continue, you know, calling for submissions. People should have submitted in the first round and now they want to take a chance here. So I think we could go through this document, the draft list, and go through it and just lead us through, you know, the submissions that they think is going to take us forward in terms of the draft bill.
Lamine and Honourable Tantra, if there's any comments from your side, Lamine.
No, thanks. This is a long list. What is the want to come and make this, all this grouping there?
No, no, we're putting the proposal to you. That's what we said. There's 21 that have submitted.
Yeah.
Let me just indicate to members, we've said to everybody that submitted, indicate to us whether you want to supplement it with a comment. We've said that up front to everybody. The question that we're asking now is, from the committee's point of view, should we call everybody, other than Land First, Black First, because we have made an undertaking, and there are a few models that have been put on the table already, so there are 21 we're asking you to advise us with your wisdom. Honourable Lumley.
Okay, no, thanks, Chair. No, I think the, well, God, sorry, but the, those that are still interested,
last month, We've prepared a document on the basis of those presentations. We'll afford you an opportunity to talk only to new matters or to where there's gaps, as opposed to reintroducing the whole subject. And we're very strict on that one. And we'll say to them, everybody, that when you come here, talk to the bulb. Don't talk as if there's nothing on the table. And if, in fact, it is covered, then don't repeat it because it's covered. Then we can afford everybody an opportunity, and they will then know that they've got 5 or 10 minutes because they're just going to talk to the gaps or the lacunas in what we have currently. And people like Glenn First will afford them an opportunity to talk to everything. But because I would imagine 60% of those 21 are people that have been here. So we'll be very clear to them. You'll just talk on new stuff or where you think we've deliberately left it out, and we'll justify why we've left it out. Would that be acceptable, Honourable Dlamini and Honourable Members? We will write accordingly and say to them, look, it's really not giving you a second bite, but talk to where there are gaps. We've got a piece of paper. We've got work. Talk to the document. And then others will give free lane like Landfast. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I'm looking at Singh. Singh might have a different view. Is it okay? Yes, Honourable Dlamini.
Chair, I think it's okay only if we are going to be specific to them that this is what they must present. If they don't present what we have asked them to present, then we stop them. Thank you.
All right. We'll try and manage it accordingly. I think they want, in any case, according to our proposed program, our brand new submissions. It'll be day two where we'll be saying to people as they start, talk to new matters and not new matters. So we'll hand it according to the honourable members, and that should save us some time. You'll indicate when we've got that document for. So for the record, we're going to invite everybody. We will afford those that have not presented an opportunity to do a full presentation, but not as if there's no documents. Those that have presented before will come and talk to us where they think that we've either ignored or didn't take the submissions seriously, and we will defend it. For the record, that's how we're going to handle it, and Cindy and her team will work on that basis from today. Again, as we're saying, Honourable Members, Mr. Lees, we're not going to force them. We're going to say you have an opportunity. Those that feel that they don't want to, we will also afford them that. So it's not compulsory to come, but that's how we will manage it. Then, Honourable Members, you received a submission from British American Tobacco. We received it on the 19th of October. The closing date was the 16th of October. And I indicated to Cindy that I will come to you for wisdom, but it was way beyond closing date. That's why it's not in your pack. We need to go back to them and indicate to them whether we're going to accept or not accept it, but they had not presented previously. I seek your wisdom. How do we respond to them? They were, like I said, we received it on the 19th, the closing date was on the 16th. My own view is that we don't want to do anything that will corrupt or bring the process into question. And therefore, if it is post-submission date, and it's their fault, really, not our fault. It's not as if it was in the system. My own view would be that I would be reluctant to accept it, but I will defer to yourselves. How do we deal with British American Tobacco, Honourable Members? Comrade Gordy.
No, Comrade Chair, I don't think there's a problem with the closing date.
Committee view that we say to them, unfortunately, they missed the closing date? Okay. All right. Thank you very much. We will work accordingly. And then, Honourable Members, when it gets to the regulations, we received, and I think it is valid criticism. If you look at what we sent out, gazetted, I think it's section 23. In section 23, we made reference to stuff that is not in the bill, but will be catered for in the regulations. And that's how we sent it out. And in our interaction, both in the written form and in my own interaction, I received comments from members saying that it is a bit difficult for them to comment without having sight of the regulations. And we felt that by the time we get to the 30th, we will put the regulations out there for comment yourselves as members. Just to indicate that initially we had indicated that the existing regulations were still in force. There were regulations, and there might have been one or two additions to it. So it's not as if there were no regulations. But nevertheless, we will once again circulate those regulations to members so that we can have a look at it, and members will then be able to comment at our next sitting on them and how we take it forward. But just to indicate, honourable members, the major ones over and above what is already there would be the revised allocation split ratio. There would be also new or revised thresholds in terms of disclosure. You'd recall that we said that we need to, in the regulations, incorporate below how much is it not necessary to disclose. We'll have to revisit that one, as has been commented. And then, of course, there will be a cap, a upper limit cap for the individuals. So those are broadly the regulations that are new, but in our current regulations we've got, for instance, the purposes of the Act. It's there. We will bring it back to you. The purposes of the Act, and also already in the regulations is how you manage unspent funds. We might want to revise that, but it's there. So what we will do, honourable members, is that we will recirculate the regulations. The two or three that I've said are brand new. We'll put a formula in, but we will, not a formula, we'll put the wording in, and we'll leave for you to discuss whether it's 90-10, 70-30, 50-50, but we'll put in the principle. The threshold, we're going to have to sit and decide. Below how much don't we want to declare, or if we want to declare, how do we do it, and also the caps. So I'm looking at Michael and his team and Professor, if you guys could work on something for us, if you could send it to us, and I don't think it'll be a problem for us to distribute it to members, so that at least they have them, and we can talk to them on the 3rd when we next meet or thereafter. Regulations. I'm talking to regulations. How do people want to process it? Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, they say the devil is always in the detail. And I think not only us as members of this committee, but the public out there really want that detail of the formula. We've been talking about unconstitutionality, etc., and that will only emerge in the regulation. But what I want to ask is a process question. With the regulations, I mean, to what extent do we as a committee allow for public comment? Is there a process for public comment? Because that will open everything up again. And I'm looking at our legal people. I know when it comes to bills, we go out to public comment, but does the same apply to regulations? Because I know we haven't been as active even as committees in the drafting of regulations when ministers are involved. And that's been a bone of contention in some portfolio committees. So can we just get some advice on that? Because we don't want to find that we are coming up with draft regulations on the 3rd, then we are obliged to then ask for public comments, and that's going to delay the process. So can someone just advise us on that?
Before we come to you, let's afford members an opportunity to exhale, and then you guys, because you're the experts. Anybody else wants to talk on the process? We agreed that we must bring it, put it out there, all of us are from this side. Anybody wants to comment on the process before I hand over? I from where I'm sitting, for my 2 cents worth to you guys here. Regulations is secondary legislation, as I understood it. And certainly the way we've been operating up to now is that we've not gone out and said to the public, please comment and consider. That's how I've understood it. But if you feel differently, say that to us. So my view would be we put it out there, it's no secret, but it's really something that resides on the side of the House as opposed to reopening the process and allowing a 3-week public hearing on regulations. That's not my understanding. But let's hear what you say. How do we process it? Prof.
The Section 24 of the bill that was published for public comment specifically states that the regulations under the repealed Act, all right, the previous Act, are deemed to be regulations under this Act. In other words, insofar as the public process is concerned, the public has been told that the existing regulations are deemed to be regulations under the new Act, subject to 3 or 4 changes, one of which is the change in relation to the formula. And that has been a substantive discussion in the debates and discussions and the submissions. The second is the threshold, because the threshold will be set below which no public disclosure is necessary. The third would be, as I think you mentioned, in respect of capping. and the fourth is the split dealing with funds that are carried over from one year to another. That already exists in the regulations. So insofar as the public process is concerned, the public has been advised that the existing regulations, which one can find, are going to be deemed regulations under this Act, and subject, as I say, to the few changes. Then I really want to refer you to Section 23 of the bill. Section 23 of the bill identifies two mechanisms for regulations. The one mechanism is the President acting on a resolution of the National Assembly. That was the structure that applied in respect of the previous bill, in respect of those regulations. They make regulations in respect of very specific sections, and those sections, of course, deal with the prescribed formula, they deal with the threshold, they deal with the purpose, any additional purpose to the for the use of funding. Then the other regulations, those are the ones in the forms and the like, are to be dealt with by the IEC. So what this bill does, it gives the IEC the power to do all the administrative detail as to, you know, how you disclose, what you must disclose, all in compliance with the statute. So insofar as the process is concerned, the public has been informed as to the structure of the statute, and when this bill is passed by Parliament, it will be passing as well the regulations. And the regulations have been before the public, both because it was passed several years ago, but also because it's been specifically identified in Section 24(2) bracket C brackets of the bill.
Happiness? Comment, Honourable Gordon?
Yeah, I think maybe there's something I've missed. Because I was, as you're talking, I was reading Section 23. Now, the President may by proclamation in the Gazette, make regulations. Fine. And then the next slide talks about the commission. I think the... And then if you go to... number 3, it says, before making any regulation in terms of subsection 1, the commission must publish the proposal. The that part that deals with publishing for public comment, does that deal with the nitty-gritty that the commission must do ex including the recommendations from the National Assembly to the President. I'm looking at these two. These are two separate processes. So the one that comes from the National Assembly to the President is processed merely by the signature of the President, whereas that which goes to the IEC must then be made first for public comment. I think I wanted just to have that separation, if my understanding is correct.
Yes, sir, that's correct. It's a good legal interpretation of the provisions. It means that the subsection 1 is a process restricted, related specifically to the really important regulations, and those are the ones dealing with the formula, the threshold, and the like. then everything else, the nitty-gritty, the administrative details, what the form should look like, how it should be done, what date, what time, how it should be given to the IEC, is all left to the IEC. The process for the President is on resolution of the National Assembly, which would mean the establishment of an ad hoc committee. That's in the future because we've already dealt with the regulations for this Act. But if, for example, one felt that you wanted to alter the formula in 2 years' time, the way that would be done first by resolution of the National Assembly, which would require an ad hoc committee to be established. That ad hoc committee would then publish its proposed change to those regulations. That would be that public process. It would then recommend to the President, and the President then would, acting on that on that resolution, go forward. So it's there are two quite distinct procedures. But the IEC, before it publishes the nitty-gritty regulations, just as in any other statute, the publish for comment, the IEC has to take that comment into account, and then it would then have the regulations published. But they are dealing only with forms and time periods and the like.
Sure.
We've got it.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I think my question is, in relation to the existing regulation, which in terms of this obviously needs to be amended, when that is done, what happens? When that is done, what happens? Before the National Assembly takes the resolution, we will meet here and agree. This is it, then what? Then take it straight to the National Assembly, or is it published for public comment first before it goes to the National Assembly, or what? I think that was the area I wanted to clarify.
Are you understanding us?
Chair, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Gray, for the question. Chair, ordinarily, what will happen is that you'll have regulations that get issued or published after the bill is enacted. So that Section 23 envisages that scenario, where the bill is enacted, it's an Act of Parliament, and now we go into the next phase of publishing regulations. What we're proposing here, and what has come from the submissions, is that they want to see regulations now, during this process. So that is informed by the public participation process currently. And during the process, commentators have said that we need to have a look at the regulations now. Now, Professor Cheadle is correct that we have informed the public in terms of Section 24 2D or 2C that you must look at the current regulations, but it's part of the bill now. It's incorporated in this bill. Now they have said that we need to see the amendments also. Remember, this is all part of the current public participation process. So they're saying it needs to be deliberated in this ad hoc committee. So when the regulations come here and we deliberate, that will be part of a public participation process. But the regulation, in fact, was informed by that process. They will be part of the committee is open to the public. There will be public hearings where it will be discussed again. So in our mind, that's all part of the public participation process. And then from there it will go to the next house, and that house will also then deal with the regulations as part of the bill as one public participation process. It won't be too separate as ordinarily it would be in this situation. Because the public has asked us, but in this situation, incorporate the regulations in this bill, show us how you're going to amend the regulations now. Because we have said that there are certain things that we need to amend, thresholds, we need to amend allocation, so they're saying do it now. So that's why we, our advice is the public participation process is happening now still, and it can happen still in the regulations. We don't need to go out and publish the regulations separately again afterwards, because the public has asked us to do it now. Thank you.
All right. We're looking to your wisdom right in the corner, Honourable Mulder. We're debating how we're going to do the regulations. But my understanding is, Honourable Members, there are two distinct sets of regulations. There's the administrative regulations that the IEC must deal with. Must it be audited? When must you send it to them? Really, that's admin work. And the IEC must deal with that. And that was our understanding. Then there's the political, if you want to call it, resolutions. The 90-10 split, the thresholds, the caps, and even the time frames for disclosure to the IEC. Those are the real political ones. I'm suggesting, Honourable Members, that together with the others that are there, what do you use the money for and so on, that we will circulate those to yourselves so that on the 3rd when we meet, we have a discussion around them. On the 3rd, we have a discussion around them, and it's an open forum, so everybody will have sight of them. We close the process on the 30th of November, but a few days earlier, Honourable Mulder, because the 30th is the last day. Really, if there is a South African that feels so strongly about our recommendation, we wouldn't be opposed to him or her writing to us and saying, you know, your 90-10, we still believe is unconstitutional. And so would members here be able to do that? And there shouldn't be another round of affording them to come to us to present. That's my submission, Honourable Members. And if it must be challenged, let it be challenged. But I think that will give people sufficient time. Because there's only four. We're really talking about four political that the public are interested in. They're really not interested in, not interested, but they're less interested in the form that it must go to the IEC. It's really about disclosure, is it accessible, what is the lower limit, what is the upper limit, and what is the percentage, 90-10. Not only them, but all of us are interested in the 90-10. So my proposal formally is that we will do something, we will give it to you. On the 3rd, we will bash it around. And it'll be out there in the public domain anyway, between the 3rd and the 21st or the 30th of November. And I think that should suffice. But let's hear, Honourable Mulder, if you think there's a different view.
My apology for being late, Chairperson, but I can hear that the committee was in good hands. I would support that proposal.
All right. For the record and for our friends out there, what you've been crying out for, and we all agree that it was a necessary part. We will first of all recirculate the current amendments, the current regulations that are there. We will add those that are new, like the disclosure cap, the upper cap, and instead of putting that the cap is R1 million, we'll put the cap is and we'll put XXX so that we debate what the cap is. The disclosure lower limit is there, XXX, and we'll discuss whether it's R10 or R50. So that's what we'll submit to you. And also the 90, 10, 50, whatever. But we'll put the principle in there, and then on the 3rd we'll discuss the nitty-gritty in terms. Should it be 90, 10, 50, 50? Should it be R10 lower or should it be R50 and that type of thing? Is that acceptable? Thanks very much. And we can go to our caucuses and start lobbying that if you want to lobby it. But on the 3rd, we'll have that discussion. You should get that by the end of the week or shortly. We'll circulate the principle. Thank you, Honourable Members. And that deals with the regulations. And I'm hoping that those that have made submissions feel that we're not leaving you behind. You'll be able to comment once we've got them by the 3rd of November. You'll get a raw first cut of what we think should be incorporated in the regulations. We've dealt with everything. I'm looking at you. Are we ready to talk about the impact of my vote counts? Members have got a copy of it. We just want to... We asked the legal team to come and talk to us about the impact. If there is, how do we incorporate it? If there isn't, then we're all happy and we continued our business. Let's hand over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you, Chair, and honourable members, and thank you for the opportunity. From the outset, Chair, I'm going to be speaking. Firstly, I'm going to be discussing the two court judgments, my vote counts, or what the judgment that has become known as my vote counts. The one was my vote counts against the Speaker and the Chairperson of the NCO, Speaker of the National Assembly and Chairperson of the NCOP and others. That was the one that was before the Constitutional Court, and later on it was my vote counts against the President and the Minister of Justice and others. Chair, before I get into the presentation, I would like, for the benefit of members who did not bring their copies of the Constitution, to read an extract, Section 32 of the Constitution, where the drafters of the Constitution in their wisdom provided for a universal right of access to information. In Section 32 it reads as follows. 32.1. Everyone has the right of access to A, any information held by the state, and B, any information that is held by another person and that is required for the exercise or protection of any rights. Subsection 2 of that section, 32, Chair, reads as follows, and it provides for a constitutional obligation now on Parliament. It says, national legislation must be enacted to give effect to this right and may provide for reasonable measures to alleviate the administrative and financial burden on the state. Chair, this issue then became a subject of discussion or argument before the Constitutional Court when a non-profit organization by the name of My Vote Counts, Vote Counts is a non-profit voluntary association whose purpose is to improve accountability, transparency, and inclusiveness of elections and politics in South Africa. Their basic premise in the application before the Constitutional Court was that the right of access to information in Section 32.1 of the Constitution entitles citizens to have access to private funding of private funding information of political parties, the so-called private funding information. And according to the applicants of My Vote Counts, such information is reasonably required for effective exercise of the right to vote in elections and to make political choices, which are rights enshrined in the Constitution in Section 19.1 and 3. Of the Constitution, respectively. Chair, my vote counts in the Constitutional Court had framed their notice of motion in the following. They argued that Parliament had failed in its constitutional obligation, as I've just read in Section 32.2 of the Constitution, to enact legislation that provides for access to information, and that the Promotion of Access to Information Act of 2000 was in fact inadequate to provide for access to information for private funding of political parties, and that Parliament must be instructed or ordered by the Constitutional Court to enact specific legislation on access to information of private funding of political parties. The Speaker and the Chairperson opposed the application in the Constitutional Court, arguing that Parliament had discharged its constitutional obligation in Section 32.2. when it enacted the Promotion of Access to Information Act. And the second aspect of the Speaker and Chairperson's opposition was that the challenge in the Constitutional Court was in fact premature, and that in line with the principle of subsidiarity, the applicants should have approached the High Court to challenge the constitutional validity of PAYA to the extent that it did not provide for access to information of private funding of political parties. The argument of the applicant's chair had also been that PAYA is not the only legislation that provides for access to information, and that it was incorrect for Parliament to argue that PAYA in fact covers the ground, the entire ground of access to information as set out in Section 32.2. The decision of the court in that regard, Chair, was the following. It was a split judgment, and the majority judgment was written by Judge Kambembe, or Justice Kambembe. She wrote, because the majority judgment in that split decision had agreed that PAYA is not the only legislation that provides for access to information. In that respect, the majority judgment said, the minority judgment makes the point that PAYA is not the only legislation that gives effect to Section 32. In this regard, it refers to various other pieces of legislation that make provision for access to information. However, even though those pieces of legislation do make this provision, they are distinguishable from PAYA. The main focus of each is some other subject, not access to information in terms of Section 32(1) of the Constitution. That this is so is reinforced by the sparse manner in which the content of each touches on the right of access to information. In each provision, for the right is merely incidental to the legislation's main focus. On the contrary, PIA's focus is one subject, the provision of information in terms of Section 32(1) of the Constitution. In short, that there is out there a plethora of other pieces of legislation providing for access to information does not mean all those pieces of legislation are the legislation envisaged in Section 32(2) of the Constitution. The court therefore dismissed the application by the applicant's chair, noting that PIA, Permission of Access to Information Act, was in fact the legislation that is envisaged in Section 32(2) of the Constitution, and that Parliament has discharged its obligation in terms of that section, and that the applicant must approach the High Court on a frontal challenge in line with the principle of subsidiarity to challenge the constitutional validity of PIA to the extent that it did not provide for access to information. This happened, Chair, the applicants approached the High Court on the same basis, saying that in order to exercise the voluntary rights in Section 19, they needed access to information that PIA was inadequate to the extent that it did not provide for sale. The court commented, Chair, that PIA is inadequate, firstly. The court agreed that PIA is inadequate. It does not provide for what the applicants had said it doesn't provide for. But the court also commented that the extent of its inadequacy is that PIA provides for access to information of public bodies and private bodies, and that the court was uncomfortable to fit in political parties in any of the two categories that are provided for in PIA. And the court therefore agreed that there needed to be a special category that would provide for access to information to private funding information of political parties. However, the court said, when the applicants had argued that there must be continuous recordal of that information and disclosure of that information, the court said it could not instruct Parliament, in line with the principle of separation of powers, it could not instruct Parliament on how such disclosure should be made. That is left for Parliament to decide. Importantly, Chair, in this decision, the court said that PIA is the legislation that is envisaged in Section 32(2), and therefore amendments must be made in PIA to make it in line with the section in 32(2) to also provide for what the applicants had, to specifically provide for what the applicants had argued for, which has the right of access to information of private funding of political parties. I would just like to read from directly from the judgment. It says that the information about private funding of political parties and independent ward candidates at local government level who are registered for elections for any legislative body that is established under the Constitution is reasonably required for the effective exercise of the right to vote in such elections and to make political choices in terms of Section 19 of the Constitution. And that PIA is declared inconsistent with the Constitution and invalid insofar as it does not allow for the recordal and disclosure of private funding of information. The court further suspended the declaration of invalidity for 18 months in order for Parliament to remedy the defect in PIA specifically, and to allow for the recordal and disclosure of private funding information of political parties and independent candidates. The order of invalidity, Chair, is also required in terms of Section 172(2) of the Constitution to be sent to the Constitutional Court for confirmation. And until such time that the Constitutional Court has confirmed the order of invalidity, PIA remains valid in the legislation that is envisaged in Section 32(2). In relation to what the committee is engaged with regard to political party funding bill, with the political party funding bill that is before the committee, Chair, it would be our submission in respect that PIA is the legislation that must provide for private funding of political parties, as was discussed in the, and decided in the Constitutional Court decision and confirmed by the High Court decision on the frontal challenge, and that any such attempt to provide for access to private party funding information in this bill would not necessarily cure the defect that was identified by the Constitutional Court in PIA, and that to comply with the Constitutional Court decision in relation to PIA, Parliament would still engage itself, would be required to engage itself in amending PIA so that it falls in line with the provisions in Section 32(2) of the Constitution. Thank you very much, Chair.
advantage of your legal speech. Maybe there's legal people here. I think, and that is fine. Please answer two questions for me. What we've been engaged with from the middle of June and envisaged to end in the 30th of November is by no means affected by the judgment around my vote count. Yes or no? That's the first question. If it is, how is it affected and what must we do? If it's not, then it means we can proceed with what we are doing. Because the High Court judgment spoke to Paye, it didn't talk to what we perceive it. That's my understanding. And therefore, we can't remedy the defects in Paye vice versa or through this piece of legislation. Or are you saying to us that we must stop doing what we're doing because the court says it must be done through Paye? I think that's really what we want to. Yes or no? And we carry on. I'm saying my own understanding is that it doesn't affect this piece of legislation. Anybody feels that what we perceive it now is unconstitutional, they have the right to take it to court. But this can't be merged and mixed with what is happening at the High Court or what happened at the High Court. Answer that question. The second one that maybe is not for you, but you can answer it because you raised it. You spoke about ward councillors and independent. My understanding, honourable members, is that we're working on a brief given to us by the National Assembly. Very specific terms of reference. Deal with political parties represented at national and represented at provincial level. As per section 236 of the Constitution, section 116, and I think section 57. So ours was very specific. We also then at that point took a decision that in our report to Parliament, we will indicate to the powers that be that there is a need for local government to be looked at some point, but not through this piece of work, but it must be looked at because we think it is necessary that local government is covered. That's my understanding. So my simple question to you before I open it up to other members to ask questions before you respond, can we proceed with what we're doing or can't we? If we proceed with what we're doing, are we going to be in contempt with what the court has said or are we okay? I think that's the real question. Having read all the legalese that you spoke about, I think it's a simple yes or no, and if yes, fine. If no, why and how should we carry on if it's no? Any other comments that people want to put to our legal team? Let's take Honourable Singh and then Comrade Gode, and then you'll respond to us. Because really we need to know, are we wasting our time or should we continue? Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. See, my view, and I might be incorrect, is that these are two separate issues. Although what we are doing will complement the access to information and will actually contain the information. Because the bill that we are looking at will have the information. We are providing for that. It must be publicly accessible. So I think it's two separate processes, but complementary. And we have nothing to do with PIA. We must just continue. Parliament has everything to do with PIA and complying with the what the court has ruled. I don't know.
Got it. And then you'll follow Honourable Matthias.
Yeah, no. Thanks, Comrade Chair. I think The issue that you have raised is actually more important for Parliament than for us, to the extent that Parliament should not get the false notion that by passing this bill, we will then have given effect to that judgment. As I had one member of Parliament saying in a television interview on the day of the judgment that there's no need to amend PIA because this ad hoc committee is actually taking care of those concerns. I think for me that is where it is. And so far as the work that we're doing is concerned, I don't think that is affected. And I'm sure as I was reading the judgment from the Constitutional Court, they indicated that there are a number of pieces of legislation that deals with access to information. But PIA is a specific legislation responds to a particular section in the Constitution. So the judgment merely says the categories of information available in PIA is limited. Can that be corrected? Without saying that any other piece of legislation cannot deal with the same issue, just as we're doing right now.
Honourable Vatel.
Thank you, Chairperson. My understanding would be that there would be a bit of an overlap, right? Because PIA is saying, so the whole thing about PIA is that we must be able to access information. But if there's no information to access, what are they accessing? So part of our duty is to say, okay, we need to make sure that there's a place where it is reported that we disclose our public funding. So when another organization or whatever it is wants to be able to access that information, it's reported somewhere. So you can't access information that we do not allow reporting on it. So there is that slight overlap, and maybe we need to be advised on how we must move in that direction. What information does the public want to access? And then we must make sure that we have systems in place or our legislation in Parliament is in place to be able to allow that reporting so they can access that information. So maybe you can just guide us on that.
Thank you very much. Any other comments before we hand back to the legalese? No? Over to you. All of you, if you want to comment.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair. I just want to also give to my colleague here to add. On the issue of halting the process, Chair, because of this judgment, my definite answer there is no. There is no requirement that the committee must stop what it's doing because of the judgment. As the honourable members have pointed out, this process is complementary, and Parliament still has an obligation to go and cure the invalidity that has been found in PIA in order for PIA to provide for this category that is not currently not provided for. On the issue of, so it's complementary, the comments, I agree with the comments by an honourable member that the process here will complement what is to happen to PIA because all of it is in realization of the of constitutional right of access to information. But PIA specifically is the act that requires to be amended in order to provide for all the procedures that are necessary to exercise that right. And the overlap, I suppose, is a drafting issue that the drafting team can deal with to make sure that whatever happens here will speak to the future amendment of PIA to enhance the right of access to information. With regards to the principles set out in the two judgments, I just want to make a comment regarding that. The committee would have to be guided, persuaded by all of the principles of access to information on private party political funding that are set out in the two judgments. So the advice is not to ignore the principles, but to be informed by them in the work that the committee does. But of course, not with the end view of curing the defect in PIA, as the members have noted, but with just enhancing all of the regime around access to information. The court itself in paragraph 49 noted that there's various other legislation on access to information, but PIA is the specific one required to exercise this right. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add to what my colleague is saying, is that we seek to regulate political party funding in our book. PIA gives effect to the constitutional obligation for access to information. In this case, the court has said, and this must still be confirmed by the Constitutional Court, by the way, but in this case, the court has said, you need to add a third category there of political parties in PIA, because that's absent. So the reporting agent in terms of PIA will be political parties, where anybody from the public can directly access information from a political party in terms of PIA. And that's a right the court has said, the High Court, in fact, has said, in terms of the Constitution. And that must be given effect to, and following must cure that defect in terms of PIA. What we seek to achieve is to regulate political party funding. And where the overlap comes in is our clause 10 that deals with disclosure. Now, our disclosure there can be viewed as access to information, but it's more disclosure to counter corruption, for instance. And that's why our disclosure is there. So though it is complementary, the purpose of the disclosure is slightly different. And our reporting agent is also different. Remember, the political party, in terms of our proposal, reports to the commission. The commission then reports. So that, in fact, is also not what PIA is asking. PIA is asking information directly from political parties. So we do have a proposal to make the to make it more complementary, to say that to let the bill speak to the act, and this is something that we can pitch, for lack of a better word, to the committee, either now or in our session when we deal with it on the 3rd. dial-up to you, Chair, but we do have a proposal to address fire, just to make it clear that people always have their rights in terms of fire. Currently the way fire is, or the way fire might be amended in future, that right can be enforced in this bill also. Well, not enforced, but clarified in this bill also. Thank you.
All right. After everything has been said and done, our advice is that we continue with our business, and that Parliament still has an obligation somewhere else to deal with the Paya matter. All right. That then deals, honourable members, with the three immediate items on our agenda. In terms of the programme, honourable members, on the 3rd, we will get a formal briefing from legal and the content advisers in terms of what has been communicated to us via the 21 submissions. And we will also, at that day on the 3rd, start our discussions around the 90-10, the political regulation matters, on the 3rd. On the 7th and the 8th of November, we will afford those that want to come and do public submissions an opportunity to do so, on the 7th and 8th of November. And remember, we are saying, for those that are doing it for the first time, we'll be lenient. For those that have submitted previously, you're going to only talk to what we've put out in public and where you think we might have left out what you thought was important, or we've gone extreme the other way. So we'll be very strict in terms of how we engage with you on the 7th and 8th. As things stand, honourable members, on the 7th and 8th, our program is from 9 until 1. It's the normal morning program. But depending on who asks, we will have to go to the House Chair and ask for permission to work while the House is sitting. Currently, our program is from 9 to 1, but we'll ask Cindy and the team to start negotiations for working during the sitting if the need arises. On the 10th, we will then call the IEC and Treasury back. You'd recall they came to us, I think it was the 1st of October. We've given them some work to do. They will come back on the 10th and brief this committee in terms of their readiness or their inability to do whatever they need to do. From the 14th of November until the 30th of November or the 21st, we will go into committee session, where we will then take everything that we've done and prepare our document for Parliament. So that's the program that we envisage going forward, honourable members. And if you agree with that, we will then ask Cindy to... I mean, that's the draft that you've got before us. If we agree with it, we will then use that as the basis of how we're going to work, and on the basis of how we ask the House Chair and Parliament to accommodate this ad hoc committee. Any comments on the program? If not, anybody moves for the adoption of the program as proposed. Thank you very much. Happiness. Thank you and welcome, Honourable Steenhuisen. We Honourable members, thank you very much. No, it is. Yeah, they've all agreed. Cindy wants a second. I said no, everybody agreed. Honourable members, just as we wrap up, I don't think there's anything else. Just, and members will have an opportunity. I think in my own reading of what has come out, and remember you need to be doing it yourselves, and they will give us a view on the 3rd. Clearly, as a committee, we need to go and apply our mind about the equitable and proportional part of it, whether it is constitutional, whether it will make everybody happy. I think we need to have a discussion and agree on the threshold. Now, my understanding of the threshold, honourable members, is that as we're sitting here, we said that we don't want to encumber the political parties or anybody to disclose everything, the 1 rand transaction, the 2 rand transaction, that there should be a limit under which there shouldn't be. So that we must have a discussion on. I can tell you that there are certain people that are saying, but if you do that, you actually defeat the whole aim of total disclosure. But I'm saying that's a discussion that we need to have. I think ours is more from a pragmatic point of view. Do you really want to disclose somebody that's given 1 rand? That's the discussion we'll have. And then, of course, the upper cap. Individual, can he donate 1 million rand, 50 million rand, and so on. Political parties will go and have their own brainstorming on that. We're hoping that we'll finalize that when we come. And then the other major one was the time frames. I know in our act we said we'll do it once a year, and in the election year we'll do it quarterly. There seems to be a sense that once a year is not sufficient. But I think those are the kind of discussions that we need to have. I'm raising it, honourable members, because when people come for their public hearings, I think we should engage them. Why are you saying that annually is not good enough? And that type of thing. So these are the things that I have picked up, certainly, but I'm sure there are many more that you yourself have picked up. And we'll ask and engage with our visitors on the 7th and 8th around those issues. That is my 2 cents worth, honourable members. Is there anybody else that wants to add, to subtract from, in terms of the way forward, advice, and we take it from there? Anybody? Honourable Singh?
Yeah, Chairperson,
I started that, yes.
Yeah, I think...
Hold on, before you start, Singh, we'll allow everybody to have their 2 cents worth before we leave. We can't have a meeting where Stian Hazard doesn't say a word and Boulder doesn't say a word. So everybody will have their 2 cents worth and we take it as we go. But let's start with you, Singh.
thank you, Chair. Got our private battle here. I think the other substantive submission is from Salah. And I think we have to apply our minds from now to then as to whether we've accommodated that aspect adequately. Otherwise, we can have a long discussion with Salga on what they are proposing. There's lots of proposals, you know. And then I think that's something maybe between now and then we'll have to apply our minds. Is it sufficient to cater for what Salga is proposing in the medium term? So I think that's one, because it's quite a substantive issue.
Well, remember what we're doing, honourable members, we're putting points so that when these guys come and do their content presentation to us, they must at least cover some of these things, because that's what you're here for. Go and do this kind of research for us. Honourable Mulder, if there's any from your side?
Yes, Chairperson, I'll use 30 seconds of my 2 minutes that you've indicated. No, I think we've been running quite in terms of our programme, and we've done the process as we indicated right from the beginning. As far as I'm concerned, we're on the final phase of the process. And I'm just a little bit still worried about the program that we may not be able, we have to be able to not only finish the work of the committee, but what we do must go to the House and also be finished in time in terms of the program of Parliament, which is quite hectic, especially that last week. Let's just keep that in mind. Thank you.
So you think we can
see more days, right? Yeah, no, I think the substantive issue that we need to deal with is around those matters that you have spoken to, and so far so good. My only concern, of course, was around time, looking at the work of the House to say if we have agreed on the program, but if we're able to speed up things, I don't think that there's any harm. Because I think the only area that is might require quite some time would be the public hearing. Other than that, I think we only have 2 or 3 issues that are quite substantive, beyond which I think we should be able to see how the process speed up so that before we arrive, the whole thing is wrapped up.
Honourable Liz.
Chairman, there's nothing really to add. I mean, the program's there, and we'll do it. We hold a slightly different view with regard to the end of November. If the process can't be fixed, we go back to the House and get another resolution to extend it. It's not the end of the world. But, of course, let's try and do it.
Honourable Chen, is there any? Thank you. Honourable Mateus? Honourable Damini?
No? I think obviously since the year end, there's going to be a lot of work, even on other finance committees. The issue is that because we want to deal with this
legislation and make sure that we do the correct thing. But
maybe if we're not making time in terms of what has been allowed, then it's something that it needs to be discussed or taken back to the House. Because the danger of rushing it, because it's going to have an impact in terms of how we operate as political parties in the country. So its impact can be very detrimental if we rush it. So let's try to move at the measured pace, but let's make sure that all the information, everything that we feel it needs to be part of this bill, it is there. So that is my only issue, that we must not only be obsessed with time and end up having a weak bill that will come back and give us problems.
Comrade Tat?
No, Chair, I think I'm covered. Sorry, what honourable members have said in terms of us. in terms of us going back to Parliament and asking for an extension so that we can do justice in our process. Rather than rushing for the 30th, and whereas at the end of the day, what we'll have done, it will be challenged by other people. So the best thing, let's ask for the extension in Parliament. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Now, the last two speakers, we take note of what you're saying. We certainly will go that route if the need arises. I don't think we should be jumping the gun now and asking for it, but if the need arises, we'll certainly go that way. Honourable Steen Nathan.
See, I've been provoked to the speaking now. Yeah. I didn't intend to, I've been provoked. Yeah. And I just want to say, and I have the privilege of serving in the programming committee, and the legislative agenda, particularly what the executive wants to get through before the end of this year, is very ambitious. And so I think we might find ourselves being crowded out by, you know, the legislature, the executive wanting to drive through a batch of stuff. Bear in mind, we've only passed 9 pieces of legislation this year. So, you know, there's a rush to try and up the numbers before the end of the year. So we're going to be competing with other things as well. So I think we just need to bear that in mind.
Thank you. But because we've got strong and competent people in this committee, we'll win it. I have no doubt that the executive are not going to crowd us out of this one. They're not going to crowd us out of this one. If it means we must take them head on, we will do that. This is about the democracy of the country. That's my view, that we certainly can't be relegated. But having said that, honourable members, thank you very much. We will do what we need to do in terms of the background work or the backroom work, inviting people, sending out notices, changing the programme if it needs to in terms of the hearings. We will submit to you the actual programme, who comes on what day and at what time. And it's all in the old assembly, I think. It's all in the old assembly, so we will send that out to you. We will also send out to you, and I'm looking at the side of the table, a discussion document on the regulations. In other words, the regulations as we have now, and the 2 or 3, even if it means we put dashes where the political parties must put their figures, that will also go out. Send if that can go out ASAP, all in preparation for the 3rd. On the 3rd, Michael, you and your team, as well as Cody, you guys will come and tell us what you've picked up here to empower us for the hearings the week later. To our friends in the media, thank you very much. We will meet on the 3rd. On the 3rd, we will meet to do our final preps. And then the 7th and the 8th would be the public hearings, but you are welcome every day. The committee sits here. Welcome. Thank you very much, and the meeting is adjourned.